and welcome to the Best Practice Network Apprenticeship Podcast. I'm Tasha Singleton, the program lead for the Early Years Senior Leaders Apprenticeship. And I am joined today by my amazing co-host, the lovely Emma Minchella, who is our Curriculum Manager for Enrichment. Emma, hello and good morning.
Good morning, everybody.
How are you doing today? You all right?
Very excited about this conversation today.
Yeah, I think it's a really important conversation to have. So today we will be exploring how effective human resource procedures can form the foundation of a successful earlier setting. So from safer recruitment processes to staff induction and to ongoing professional development and performance management, strong human resources practices really help create a positive, motivated team that delivers high quality care and learning outcomes for every child. And it ensures that our teams stay motivated, they stay switched on, they stay excited, and provide that the very best of care. Today, we are joined in our discussion by Tim Hopkins, who is the Strategic Development Manager for Humpty Dumpty Nurseries Limited. Hello, Tim, and welcome to our podcast.
Hi, both. Lovely to be here. Thank you.
Good of you to be here and very excited that you are here with us today. Tim, would you like to just give us a little bit about your background before we get stuck in?
Yeah, so my background, I think probably like a lot of people is, I was a teacher way back when. So I qualified as a teacher, worked in the maintained and independent sector, right the way through to Key Stage 3, the heady heights of Key Stage 3, but not for very long because my passion was early years. I loved the absolute poetic license to watch the youngest children learn and develop. And I've been involved in early years for just over 20 years now, which makes me feel old because I've also worked for Humpty Dumpties for 15 years this week.
Happy anniversary.
Thank you. And I now have people who I looked after in the preschool who are apprentices or work for us, or they have their first foray into working with children is with us, which is absolutely fantastic.
Well, what an impression you must have made on them then, for them to want to come back and work there. They didn't go, oh, I can't wait, get away, I don't want to go back. Must have had-
No, I think, again, and I'll probably say it lots and lots, I am really lucky because we have an absolutely amazing team at Humpty's, from the top, right the way down. And we have the Humpty's outline that is, in a nutshell, it's something that we do look for, which I'm sure we'll talk about today. But if somebody is working for Humpty's in whatever capacity, there's a reason that they're there. They form an integral part of the jigsaw puzzle that is one of our settings or part of our organization. It's really important.
And getting that the team dynamic right, and you know, the right people in the right place doing the right job with the right support, really, isn't it?
It's absolutely essential. And you know, never ever going to say got it right every time, and you know, could make an absolute blooper reel of the decisions over the years that I've learned from. And I think it is that, you know, that learning and humility that makes it really important. But yeah, certainly team dynamics is key. And it'll be hopefully quite obvious from my voice that I am a man in early years, and I'm probably a man in early years. And I wish there were more of us, but I wish there was more of lots of different types of person. And I think as we move forward, that diversity in terms of team dynamic is key, whether that be age, gender, ethnicity, actually that reason they are who they are. When we're working with children with quite complex backgrounds, even at two, when they join us at their first point of availability of funding, they have had a life and a half for some of them. And for some of our staff who have had some experience, have that closer idea of empathy or lived experience is really key. And again, really proud that we're able to do that work as well as we can at Humpty's.
I think that's such a wonderful message, actually, what you've just said there. And it's something that we talk about quite a lot. And we've been really lucky to have a lot of males attending our podcast, haven't we, Tasha?
Mm-hmm.
And it's something that we talk about, having that reflection of different people within the sector. And I have to say, Tim, I love your tie. For anybody who's listening, Tim is wearing a Humpty Dumpty tie, aren't you, Tim?
I am, yeah. I've come completely branded today. Again, something that I'm always proud to be wearing. Your Humpties means a lot to me. I receive a salary like the rest of my team, but we are like a big family, and I am, you know, proud to say that. But yes, I have lots of little Humpties. If I didn't stick out enough already, I do if I'm out and about with my Humpty tie. An umbrella. We live in England, so I have a Humpty umbrella as well.
Merch. I love a bit of merch. Excellent. So if we just kind of take it back, and we're speaking to leaders here as well, anybody that might find this information helpful, why then do you think it's so important to get HR right, to get those procedures right when we're talking about building our team and developing our team? What do you think, Tim?
Again, it's quite evident across all of education, and certainly early years, that we are in a recruitment and retention crisis, and some people will find themselves better off than others. And we found that we've become increasingly focused on understanding why people would join us. Why is it that they fill that application in? And then why do they stay? I sort of have told you already, I've been at Humpty's for 15 years. But one of my colleagues who I sit with at least twice a week has been there over 30 years. She's been there almost since the beginning. So it's really important that HR isn't just the contract, the welcome letter of employment. This is what your salary will be. This is the process that we're going to take you through in your first however many months it is that you choose to do. It's about everything. It's about creating that environment where we're all there because we love working with children. We want to see them thrive and love life and love learning. But actually, we need to do that as employees. We need to do that as team members. If we can do that ourselves, then we're more than half the way there of being that example. And I think that can be really tricky. It can be tricky dependent on size of organization. It can be tricky dependent on level of experience. And I know that we've talked about this around sometimes people become leaders because they're extremely good at what they did originally. It doesn't necessarily mean that they at that point have the skills to be great leaders, and being a fantastic practitioner or cook or handyman is fantastic. It doesn't mean you have to be at the next level. And I think that's where organizations can start to create that pathway, that it's okay to be who you are. And I see that as well in other sectors as well, in education, you know, that career pathway or, you know, opportunity for development is absolutely key.
I love what you mentioned there, because you mentioned that HR practices need to be, you were talking about the children. And I really love that, because everything kind of has that filter through from everything that we do. And I recently went on a conference and they were talking about well-being, safety from a HR perspective, and how important that is, that there is that feeling of safety and well-being. So in your sort of experience, Tim, what does HR look like in a really high performing early year setting where it does work well for both staff and children?
One of the key things that I would look for to know that as a company, we're doing that well, but also in individual settings, because they are all different. They're all unique, just like the children that we serve, is that if I'm seeing people growing and I'm seeing staff staying, so we're not necessarily recruiting less because there's some growth there as well, but that I'm not seeing people moving on for reasons that would be outside of anyone's control, relocation, becoming parents and deciding that actually they want to take a break, it would certainly be that I would be seeing growth. And again, that I think is probably something as an organization that we have found just prior to the pandemic. So we're 6, nearly 7 years on in thinking around professional and personal development being key. And whereas we've always been able to offer avenues for professional development, that personal development, so whether it be through coaching and mentoring or through the fact that we have a well-being manager as well as an employee assistance program, which is anonymous, so we don't know what people are talking about, that's for them, but they can talk to somebody in person who is a Humpty's person. And one of those people who I was talking about who's been at the company for over 30 years is our wellbeing manager. And that's always been her passion. It was as a nursery leader. It was as when she was a baby room leader, was that making sure that, I suppose, of years gone by, we might have said, was the setting mum for everybody. Yeah, I think that growth in people is really key.
It really is. But talk about actual tactics then for somebody out there who's trying to recruit the right talent. How does that start? How do you start your recruitment process off from the beginning? Walk us through that recruitment process.
If we're looking to recruit for something very specific, we do try to be really clear about that in terms of our advertisement or our whether we post it on our socials or whether it be that we know that sometimes some of the best recruitment is through word of mouth. It's through our staff team and sometimes our parent community as well. But we'll try to make it very specific what it is we're looking for. However, I think one of the reasons because of our size potentially is sometimes the person that we meet, we see that absolute talent, so then we know that we can perhaps look at somewhere else or something else for them. But certainly setting up that team, and when it comes to recruitment, recruiting someone, it's going to be one of the most expensive things that you do, because you know staff are the most expensive thing and the best thing about on that budget is that that has to be approved. So someone will come and they'll say that this is what they want to do for their team. And we then look at who's going to take responsibility for that. So we do have a small to middling size admin team who can do that receiving applications, checking that against the person's specification and in terms of what we've asked them to do. This might sound a little bit counterproductive at times, but sometimes for certain roles, we've been quite specific on what we'd like them to do. So we might like the application form, but we might also like a few sentences about themselves. Something that is missing then means that we might have an issue there if we're expecting them to work in their own team or develop something themselves. It's that if they're struggling to follow the instructions for the application, is this position right for them? It doesn't mean it's a flat no. We're not a massive multinational that if you haven't written it in black ink, then it's filed away. But we do try to be quite specific on what we're asking for. We'll know when we're interviewing what actually it is that an interview will look like. Because not only do we speak to them and ask them some questions, as you'd imagine, we also do like to see them have some interaction with children, but also members of the staff team. And that can be quite fluid for those people leading those interviews. You can get a feel around how someone is. So trying to place them with a character you could imagine them working with is important. And again, it doesn't mean that's where they're going to necessarily finish that journey, but trying to get someone else who can get a read on them as well, as well as them being able to give honest feedback about what they found.
And I think that's really important, because I think what we need to remember when we're interviewing as leaders and we're trying to bring the right people in is that they are interviewing us as well. As they should be. They should be interviewing us. Do they want to work with us as well? So we, you know, there's a level of us trying to impress upon them what we're like, and honestly, what we're like as well. it needs to be both sides.
Definitely. Definitely. And it's around that I suppose becoming less interested in whether someone can already do the job that you want them to do sometimes. And I know, again, I understand the pressures where we're driven by the statutory framework, we're driven by qualification and ratio. But for some of that qualification, we can teach, you know, fantastic partners like Best Practice. We can teach, we can do that work.
Yeah, but apprenticeships.
Actually, you know, can someone fit into our organization and will they grow? Will they be able to grow? Do they want to grow? We know what is about them, but certainly that they want to be part of that, whether it be working 15 hours a week in one of our wraparound care clubs, or whether it's actually that they've already done some time as an early years professional and they are looking for that next opportunity, perhaps somewhere that has more visible opportunities for growth and development, whether that be through leadership or whether that be through being a senior practitioner or however it might fit. But it's really, really important.
Think you've led beautifully onto this next kind of point, Tim, where we're thinking about once you have recruited the great people and you've got that person, how do you retain them beyond pay and benefits? What are the factors that have that greatest impact on the staff engagement and satisfaction and that long-term commitment?
Again, simply because of the core of staff team that have been with us for a period of time, say 5+ years, etc., is that actually if I am showing a prospective member of staff or a parent round and I talk about the Humphreys family that I've mentioned already, if we're not then delivering on that, so thinking about those values of what family means, most people would do absolutely anything for their family. And I like to believe that is the same at Humphreys, whether you're a member of staff or a customer. So actually making them feel as special as they are, all of them. And we have 200 staff at the moment. I'm gonna put myself out on a limb here because we have had some recent joiners in wraparound particularly, but I will have made it my business alongside other managers to have met all of those people. Now, it doesn't mean like when I started at Humphreys and we were less than half of that size, that actually when I became a deputy manager, that actually I knew all of my staff and I knew something about them. I'd know what their partners were called, what their children were called, where they were in their lives. But actually then having leaders who do that work, they've carried that on. And I learned that from the founders of Humphreys, from Philip and Carol, who knew everybody to the point of when it became logistically not there. I think listening to staff is really key, and listening can be kind of on multiple levels, because I want to know when things aren't working well as much as I like to know when things are working well and what can we do more of elsewhere, but actually being able to act on that. So when people do join us, it doesn't matter to us if someone's been with us a month or 10 years, they will have valuable things to add to us as much as we're hopefully adding value to them, because we're giving them a job, a career, you know, a working life which is enjoyable, and not everyone can say they enjoy going to work, and there'll be days that it is really tough. But actually then listening to what can we do to change, as well as all those other things that I'm sure lots of employers do around employee assistance, cycle to work. You know, we don't have any, you know, we have a uniform, so we provide a uniform. You know, there's none of this you buy it on your first or your last pay, you know, any of those things. But I think the listening part has been the thing which I found to be the most impactful, that they really do feel like you're listening, they're being heard. Doesn't mean always can do, you know, I'd love a pool, but it doesn't mean we can do it, or, you know, some stables, that'd be fab sometimes. But it means that actually we can listen and we can garner those ideas. And I think not just through myself, but other senior leaders and definitely the owners of Humpty's and the two really active directors. That hasn't always been the case. That idea of listening, it's been a little bit more selective, because you think around, you're listening to those leaders and no one else, which is great. But actually, those middle leaders, those practitioners, those apprentices, those work experience students, those people who come to, you know, spend a few days with us, because we're trying to help support them look at what a working life might be for them, through, you know, things like disability confident employees and the scheme and things like that. It's really important that we're listening all of the time.
And if we can link that right back to conversation that we've been having in for those of you who are doing the apprenticeship, the senior leadership apprenticeship, it would link it right back to that idea of internal challenge and feeling comfortable, and for leaders to be open to that challenge from practitioners and from apprentices and even work experience. If they've noticed and seen something and they're bringing it to our attention and being brave enough to bring it to our attention, that we're actually listening and letting them know that what they have to say and their experience is important to us as leaders as well.
Yeah, no, definitely. I think it's that about them when we make a change and it's because of someone with their consent, I would want people to know that this is this fantastic thing that we're thinking of doing or we're doing is being driven by this person, rather than maybe always being assumed that it would be in the nursery manager who has, you know, come up with this fantastic idea. I think, again, that acknowledgement of greatness and, you know, insight is really important.
I would agree with that 100%. It was just shifting, sort of thinking about, I'm just kind of thinking, then this is a culture. You're talking about a culture here, basically, that you have created, that's been cultivated at Humpty Dumpty over time. So how can then, if you can spare us some of the benefit of your wisdom over time, really about creating this culture that's inclusive, but also supports professional growth? Because I think it's that professional growth that maybe people will forego money, you know, maybe could go to work someplace more for more money. But if you've got that progression and that professional growth and people that really care about you, that might be part of retaining them as well. What do you think about creating this culture then?
I think, you know, to coin the phrase, that every day is a school day, and by no means is the blueprint complete and, you know, as embedded as it will be if we carry on with the work we're doing. But Steph, certainly celebrating that idea of difference, that we all are different. There are labels out there when we think around neurodiversity, you know, and whether we think about, you know, the broad spectrum of what might make us different from each other, but actually making sure that we can affirm that in a really positive way. Everybody has a reason to be, and everyone has a reason to be at Humpty's. That's the work of it. Making sure that there are different pathways for people to follow and that we are able to support. And if we can't support, that we find people who can help us support somebody to learn something new or gain a qualification or find an experience that's outside of what's currently on offer at Humpty's. So I'm kind of thinking around some of those staff that will spend time in a specialist setting that's local to us because there's something specific that they want to add to their portfolio for their qualification or things like that. I think that idea of individual adjustment can be quite a scary thought for a leader. And again, sometimes leaders can get very scared around setting a precedent. I used to hear that phrase quite a lot. And actually, that idea around being a compassionate leader or employer, but also being someone who is consistent, that you need to be able to do both. And when it comes down to, you know, I'm quite a big advocate around flexible working. I also see the benefits that job share might have. Also, that there might be some tasks that people struggle with for an extremely good reason. When I was talking a little bit before about when we think around trauma-informed practice, there may be things that practitioners, adults in our environment, may not be able to do because we know because they felt comfortable in sharing with us their life story. That is absolutely fine. That's not somebody getting out of doing a task. That is a sticking point for them. You see, I think that that is a reasonable judgment. That's what we would do for family. We make accommodations for people to make sure that they can thrive. Not just because they can't do part of the work doesn't mean they aren't doing the job.
This is really, really interesting. And I think, I mean, I've definitely had challenges in that, particularly in a very busy setting where you want to give people opportunity. And you talked about that fairness, that job sharing and opportunities like that. And I feel like it was very difficult for me to do within my setting. And at this time of year, it was always really challenging because you had a lot of our team were parents, and they would have sports day events. They would have children that are transitioning in schools to a different school if they're going to secondary school. And it was really, really hard to be fair to everybody because this time of year was just very, very busy for the team. And I really liked how you kind of brought up about that job sharing. If you've got the right people, job sharing isn't a problem. It can work beautifully, and it's having that right infrastructure. And I like how you've put that real focus on maintaining that. How do you approach challenges with that, Tim?
And you're totally right. It is a challenge. And when I said we don't, you know, it's definitely not exactly where I see the end point being. Gone are the times, you know, when a flexible working request, let's say, is made, they must be considered. That, you know, the law protects that, and rightly so. But actually, in terms of what is the request and what is it going to do for the role or the place that somebody currently is, you know, actually, is it a flexible working request, or is it somebody saying, for 3 weeks in June, my child is performing in a county diving competition, and I would really love to be there as a parent, but I understand that I am needed here also. What can we do? Well, for me, that's not a flexible working request. That's a request to, you know, to do something. And actually, in our leadership teams, we do have people who are parents. We have people who are grandparents. We have people who don't have their own families yet, or that's not a pathway they see themselves. So again, that idea of empathy or understanding can be tricky. And that's why there are relatively few decisions around something like a flexible working request or a room move or a transfer to a different department that are done in isolation. And I think one of the reasons that we do that is we know that in terms of safeguarding practice, having another set of eyes on, being able to step back to talk about what evidence or what we have in front of us is one of the best ways to make sure that we follow best practice through. So actually being able to talk about it with someone else. So one of the big things that we try to do is we try to have managers at different settings talking to each other. You know, whilst not breaching confidentiality, we don't have to discuss, you know, the individual ins and outs. The concept, we're talking about the concept around what might work. Do you have any experience of this? We do have outsourced HR for when things possibly aren't as straightforward and we need somebody to talk us through to make sure that we are protecting the whole thing as an organisation. But also, hand in hand with that our outsourced HR people that we use, they are also keen on making sure it's right for the employee as well. And so having that challenge internally is really key. I think when it comes to giving someone a decision, the decision has to be really transparent. It has to be understandable by everybody. So, you know, we can chuck a load of jargon at something, but is that right? And we're thinking around, well, is that ethically right? Is it transparent enough for the person to go home and explain why that's not right for Humpty's at this time? And I think that's where sometimes leaders can think that they always need to say yes. But if you can explain a decision fairly and that it is consistent within the approach that somebody is used to, or what you're selling to them at interview or when they join you, then I think that helps. Again, one of the big things, and I'd say we try to do as much of it as we can, and we're a bit bigger, is sometimes early years we can sit on our own and we can be worried about talking to someone else. And that ability to be able to network with other people who might well be a single owner manager who's in ratio for all 40 or 50 or whatever hours of the week they're in, but will have a similar, no doubt, a similar set of circumstances that may have arisen in their career. Being able to talk about that and network informally, always making sure that we're making the right decisions to not put ourselves in a position, you know, where we might be jeopardizing our organization, but certainly to remember that we're trying to keep the best people all of the time. We're trying to create somewhere where they want to stay, not because we're giving them, you know, a big carrot to say, you should stay because, you know, personally, I know that doesn't work. I know the theory says that doesn't work, but it can happen sometimes.
And so taking those individual requests into account, but also the needs of the business as well, which it can be tricky. This is, we talk a lot, again, in the virtual classrooms about the tightrope that leaders walk to make some decisions that sometimes are not universally loved or well-liked. But as long as you have the courage of your convictions and you're out there saying, this is why, let me tell you why, let me please explain to you why I had to make this decision. But no blanket no's, you know, we're looking at things on an individual basis.
Yeah. If you don't ask, you may well not get it. And it's always worth, you know, to anyone, you know, listening, if you imagine that there'll be an awful lot of leaders who are listening to this, is they would hope that for their superiors, or if they are their own superior, that if they ask, they could make it happen. Well, all staff deserve that. You know, it doesn't mean it can always be yes, but actually doing the work, you know, actually visibly and through communication, working through that, whether it be a set process that you have to follow for certain things, or whether it is I want to hear your ideas, especially when it comes to job share. I mean, I find job share a lot is such a big capacity giver. It can be a financial taker, but the capacity giving is so much more in terms of knowledge of children. If we think about practitioners, knowledge of key children, when you've got two people building those fantastic loving relationships with children and they know them inside and out, and the parent comes and they've having a wobble about, I don't know, that they might be demonstrating some behaviours at home that maybe aren't as welcomed. And actually having two people to talk to around, well, what's working well in the setting? What are we noticing about it? You know, they're the things to be celebrated where, of course, you can.
yeah, where you can. So we've done, again, talking in the virtual classrooms about promotion, and how that can impact, because you alluded to that, Tim, at the beginning when you said not everybody who is amazing in their role goes on to maybe be the best leader, whether or not that's just experience and something, you know, a lot of people, you know, nobody starts off being an amazing leader. You have to, that you make a lot of mistakes and you find your way, you know, you find your way through and you go, well, I won't do that again kind of thing. But thinking about how you grow leaders within your organization, growing your own leaders, bringing them on, who, of course, we do recruit outside sometimes for leadership, but as much as possible, if you can recruit from within, that's, you know, that's brilliant. So how do you do that? How do you grow your leaders?
I think one of the things that I realized, probably, I'm going to be really honest and say about halfway through my leadership kind of time of overseeing big groups of people, is that sometimes that potential for leadership is not about the people who are always telling you something or always coming to show you something. They're not leaders. Don't always have to be the most confident of people for that, you know, for that talent, to spot that talent. And it's that making sure, and again, it's why it's so important to talk to everyone within the remit that you sit in and find out about them. And you know, we talked in the virtual classroom around that social capital idea, you know, that actually those relationships that you see, that informal influence, you know, a leader, it should be somebody that people can turn to for advice. And I'm really careful there to say advice, not answers, yeah. Because you can sometimes be at a table and everyone's looking at you because you know, the most senior, you should know the answer. Well, no, that isn't the case. You know, that's why you surround yourself with people who can work. We can all work together to get the outcome there. So yes, certainly, whether it be through actually offering people pathways to get a qualification or to have an experience of, again, you know, we talked around men in early years, but thinking that the sector is dominated by you know, female employees make up, you know, 90 something percent at least, I think, is, well, actually, because of genetics, because of nature, and there are opportunities that come up when people start their own family or their children start school and they reduce their hours or they want to do a job share, you know, looking for those opportunities where people can demonstrate skills or gain experience to learn new skills is really key. And I'm sort of thinking that in terms of those future leaders, sometimes they're, for us, it's not always been in obvious places. So we think around, someone comes as an apprentice, then they become an early years educator with a qualification, then they might become a senior practitioner, and then they might become a group leader, or they might have done that before, maybe a third in charge and a deputy, you know, that's great. That's quite a linear idea of early years. But actually at Humpty's, we've got forest school leaders, for example. So qualification is full and relevant for forest schools, but it doesn't fit with the statutory framework. But we've got them. We've got three or four of them, and they're absolutely key. We've got those staff that would be looked after children, or previously looked after children, champions, that actually, for whatever reason, they have the skills and knowledge to work with. And I'm going to say it's actually more parents, foster parents, social workers, those other agencies that make that multi-agency working work. You know, so actually it's always looking for where someone's passion is, and being honest that, well, you know, I'm not looking for a modern foreign language specialist at this time, but please don't think that I haven't heard that that's something you're really passionate about. Because lo and behold, the organisation that we've used for those sessions in our organisation, they're moving on to a different part of their life. So I am now looking for someone who has a passion for language, you know, and I remember that person is there, and they're, you know, currently sitting in one of our preschools, you know, hopefully still as passionate as the, you know, year ago that we spoke about it. So yeah, remembering that. But also, you know, when you look externally, I think if you're looking for future leaders, I think thinking about where they fit into your organization, and I suppose sharing where you see the organization going. You know, we've reached a point where it's quite comfortable in terms of where we are. But I'm always told, never say no, Tim. Always have the conversation, you know, whether it be with a finance officer for a Multi Academy Trust, or a bursar at a local school, or, you know, or when I know that really great settings, the owner has reached a point where they are looking, you know, it's always got to be about that growth and making sure you've got people who can do things.
Well, now you're talking like a strategic leader, Tim.
Thank you. Again, and again, that's where the apprenticeships really, really come into it. Is actually, I hopefully am leading by example by putting myself out there and doing something that's academic again, rather than always passing up the opportunities and giving everyone else a go, because that, you know, that's a good example of leadership, but actually, you know, putting myself through something that's going to involve a portfolio and an endpoint assessment and being on the other side has been a fab experience.
And you're leading by example, aren't you? So that's exactly what you said.
I really liked the fact that you mentioned about that internal succession, because when people have got something to grow within, that's always amazing. But it is also knowing when you need to reach out externally, or when maybe you don't have that expertise inside and you need to look outside. And I think that's something that's really, it's really what shapes things and can develop really strong companies and company practice, which is lovely. And Tim, if you could give us one piece of HR advice to an early years leader who wants to build a thriving team culture, what would it be and why?
I think treating human resources and people management in the same way that we think about where we would like the children to be. So our child outcome strategy is always that we want them to grow and have progress and thrive. And I think every workforce decision that we make, no matter how big or small, it will ultimately affect children's experiences they have every day. And I think as we're being able to remember that when we're making the decision, that sometimes we don't have to make the decision now, like straight away. You know, we know that if people ask us a question, they want an answer straight away. But being able to give those decisions the time, the thought, the consideration that they deserve is exactly the same way that we would plan for the next steps for children, or where we think that we'd like the children to go in their you know, learning experience with us. And I think that's something that is really, I suppose, it's hit home when I've been doing a lot of the reading, is that, you know, whilst I can see that, you know, the idea of the butterfly wings and the impact that can have, you know, hundreds of miles away, whatever, is actually sometimes if we make a decision because we think we need to make the decision, then that person can have a not great day. And if they're not having a great day, no matter how professional they are in terms of body language, in terms of how, you know, from the virtual classroom, how psychologically safe they feel, the children aren't going to have the bestest day. Really, we're all there to make sure the children have the bestest time. If we can do the same, brilliant. That's it for me.
I think that's amazing, because it's clear that you have a people-driven culture. People are staying for 15 and 30 years. There, you must be doing something right.
Yeah, and again, that's what I have to say. You know, Carol and Philip, who started Humpty's, you know, way back when, in their house in Wall, and that's why we're called Humpty Dumpty, because he fell off a wall, is you joined a family. When I went for my interview, I did feel like I was joining a family, and I definitely have done. And I feel that it's now, as someone who works on the ground in the settings, that's exactly what they would want me to continue doing until I'm told that isn't where we're going. That's exactly what I want us to be. I want us to be the family that we are, you know.
I think that's lovely.
That's lovely.
Thank you. It is. Thank you so much for joining us today. I've really enjoyed this conversation. And thank you to our listeners out there for listening to this episode. So if you could leave a review or a comment on your favorite podcast platform, then that helps us to spread the word and improve the quality of early years apprenticeships. You can also contact us via our podcast email at podcast@bestpracticenet.co.uk. If you have any feedback or any suggestions for us, for the show, we might revisit them in future episodes. So come on in and join the conversation. What are your thoughts? Do you have any questions or insight for others that you'd like to share? Let us know. And that's it for this episode. So until next time, take care and goodbye.